Good morning, everybody, and welcome to CIBC's Eastern Investor Conference. My name is Stephanie Price. I'm the telecom and technology analyst here with CIBC. And kicking off the conference with us today, we've got BCE. We're very pleased to have Mirko Bibic, President and CEO, here to provide us with an update. Welcome, Mirko.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So,
morning, everyone.
why don't we start off with MVNO rates, which have been topical? Can you talk a little bit about the implications for BCE from the CRTC arbitration ruling and how we should think about potential MVNO rates here? Sounds like rates are kind of close to that U.S. roaming rate level, which was definitely below where they have been in Canada in the past.
It's really hard to tell what the impact is going to be because it's actually almost impossible to predict whether or not this is a sign of things to come or it's a one-off, because the decision seems so off base. Like when the CRTC actually declares that it's okay for a rate to be below cost, and that an infrastructure owner can absorb a temporary loss, it just kind of, you have to wonder, is this a one-off because of the surrounding circumstances of that arbitration? If it's not a one-off, like the decision then is completely off base in the sense that rates have to be just and reasonable. They have to be compensatory. Anyway, it's going through an appeal. We're supporting that appeal for the very reasons that I just said. And not trying to dodge the question, first of all, we don't know the rates. We just know that they're not compensatory because the CRTC said so. And it's really hard to tell if it's a one-off or it's a new direction for the CRTC. If it's a new direction, it would be completely out of line with 40 years of facilities-based policy from both the federal public policy and CRTC decision. So I'm trying to resist reading too much into it right now.
Okay. So maybe on that note, we can switch to TPIA.
Yeah.
So there's another one that the government is taking a look at. In the current regulatory environment, do you think that there's actually an option or an outcome that could satisfy all parties? Is there a way that could balance all the competing factors at work here in the TPIA discussion?
I paused because you asked that. I've been asked this general question before many times, but you asked it in an interesting way. It's the, is there a way to satisfy all the parties?
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to put it. I would say that you gotta start with first principles. So if I were in a regulatory hearing, let's say, I'd respond and say, well, what are we trying to accomplish, right?
Yeah.
What's the goal? Is the goal to satisfy all parties? And so is there like a magic number of providers that we want and why? Doesn't seem to be the right, I think the way you phrased it is probably how certain parties are looking at it, but I'm not sure that that's the right kind of way to look at it from a public policy perspective. Isn't the objective more coverage, better prices, better quality? And if that's the objective, I think it should be, then I think the answer is clear. If you encourage companies like Bell to build more fiber, you get the right outcomes because you get, in areas that have nothing, you get broadband. In areas that have cable companies, which have traditionally pre-fiber been the dominant internet providers, now you get competition. With competition, you get lower prices. You can just see what's going on in this market right here in Montreal. We've come in with fiber aggressively since 2018, and we keep building and building and building. The prices are better than they've ever been before for consumers here. The service from fiber is much faster than cable. And for the first time in a very, very long time, the dominant player here, which is not us, has got its hands full, which is, and they're a really strong competitor. Ultimately, it's the consumer that benefits. So I would say, back to your question, I think you just got to be careful. You got to start with what are you trying to achieve, and then make sure that the TPIA rates, or the wholesale broadband rates don't create disincentives to companies like us to continue to build, to create all the dynamics that I just described.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty basic, but it's actually real.
So maybe switching over to the base business, the back-to-school season just ended. Looks like pricing remained relatively stable on the wireless side versus what we saw in May when Quebecor launched Freedom. How do you think about the competitive environment here heading into kind of the very competitive Black Friday season?
I think, well, I'll start with the market's growing. It's still growing. I think there's a lot of room there for all the players to find their growth, right? Kind of the rising tides lifts all boats kind of approach to it. We're very strong in the premium segment. We're getting better in the value segments. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite pleased with that. We see good growth. I was pleased with, reasonably pleased with how the competitive environment played out during back to school. It was more intense than it was prior to back to school, more intense than as a CEO you'd like it to be, but you recognize you're in a competitive marketplace, so you deal with it. I'm pleased that the promotions were more towards data than heavy device discounting. So that part's good. And as we head into November and December, I think that those dynamics will probably continue to play out.
Okay. You mentioned value, the value segment in that answer. Can you talk a little bit about the positioning of the flagship versus the flanker brands versus the fighter brands in the current environment? I know you just recently relaunched a version with 5G features here.
Yeah, so I've been saying since 2020 that we are going to put the most emphasis in what we do on premium postpaid smartphone loadings, plans. And on the Bell brand, leveraging kind of our best network promise, our vastly improved customer service, and our strong distribution. And that continues to work well, right on strategy. We're executing exactly as we said we would. We did identify that we could do more in the value segment, in the flanker brand segment. That's why in July we repositioned Virgin Plus. So, the first thing is you look at the brand and the brand campaigns that we have now. We're just trying to speak to a broader audience than we were before, and that's just in recognition of kind of the growth, where the growth is coming from. And we also, we're not oblivious to changing dynamics and the merger that happened and all the moving pieces and kind of what Freedom was going to do. So with that is we took a step back, rebranded it, broader appeal in terms of the brand campaign, made Virgin Plus available on 5G, not 5G Plus, so there's still that separation between Bell and Virgin. We continue with member benefits. And it's worked, and that's on the wireline side as well, actually. And it's worked really well. And we've expanded Virgin Plus's distribution, available in Staples, available in some Bell stores. So we kind of attacked price, promotion, place, et cetera.
And when you think about wireless ARPU, it was flat year over year in Q2. How do you think about the puts and takes in the midst of this competitive environment in terms of ARPU, and how do you differentiate Bell? And I think you just touched on it in your last answer. How do you differentiate Bell in the current environment?
Yeah, so we differentiate. Yeah, I think on the Bell, I won't repeat kind of the whole Bell versus Virgin answer, but ARPU's holding up, fairly stable, which is great in the environment, the general environment that either the macro environment or within our industry, generally speaking, which is pretty good. I'd say what's supporting ARPU is the continued 5G adoption curve. Like, we're at slightly below 50% of subscribers on 5G, so there's a lot of room to grow there, and it's still the case that those on 5G use more, spend more, so that's good. There's still a roaming comeback So roaming is still there. It's just that when you look at the roaming growth year over year, you know, it's not as aggressive as it was last year as we were coming out of 2021. But there's still a little bit of room there, and so, you know, that's what continues to support ARPU. I mean, on the other side, you know, there is a transition to installment plans, which is having an impact on ARPU, but we're managing that fairly well. And then, you know, you ask about ARPU, but generally, you know, let's go back to the growth. There's a lot of wireless growth there. So, you know, on the service revenue side, P times Q, like the volume's there. The volume's there, which continues to kind of provide good runway for service revenue.
Yeah. So one of the areas has been immigration, mm-hmm. and strong immigration in Canada. Can you talk a little bit? I know a competitor has kind of staked out originally the immigration side, and can you talk a little bit about what BC is doing in terms of immigration and how you're driving those new ads?
Yeah, so we're doing well in the multicultural segment and in the new Canadian segment. We can do better though. So we've identified that as an area where we can do better and grab more share. And it goes back to actually the Virgin Plus repositioning. Mm. You know, one of the reasons to reposition the brand so that it has broader appeal is exactly to speak more directly to new Canadians and those who are arriving in Canada, and that's the price point as well. So that's one of the things we've done, and just kind of focused, you know, very deliberate in our distribution strategy as well, and some of the tactics that we've deployed. Okay. So there's room to grow there in that segment.
Yeah. I'll open it up to the floor here, see if there's any questions on anything we've touched on to date. No? All right.
It's early.
Maybe we'll move over to wireline.
Yeah.
So the cable cos, it looks like, have been taking back a little bit of the internet net ad market share over the last few quarters. Where do you see the cable cos getting more aggressive? Is it in fiber areas, or is it in the pockets you don't have fiber yet? And how's Bell positioning themselves in this type of environment?
Yeah, so you have to kind of unpack that, right? So if you take a look at our results over a 3-4 year yeah. period of time, including more recently, we are still growing. You know, we have strong growth in internet net ads. Our fiber net ads are very. The growth is mm-hmm. very strong. Continues to be very strong. Where you're seeing some pressure in our footprint is where we don't have fiber, so in our copper footprint, and we're very transparent about that. And from the very, like from 2021, we've been very transparent. Fiber is a winning strategy. We had proven it out over a number of years. We got more aggressive in the fiber build, as everyone knows, since 2021. We said we were going to continue that for a certain number of years, and we were going to show quarter after quarter that it's working, and it continues to. So I think, generally speaking, cable is under pressure. So where they're going to get their growth is where we don't have fiber. That's costing them, I think. And where we have fiber, we're grabbing share. So I'm presuming it's costing them too, because they're losing share. So it continues to be a winning strategy. Nothing's changing.
Okay. How do you think about the run rate consumer wireline market share for Bell? You know, what do you see in kind of those mature fiber footprints in the GTA and in Montreal? Are you getting to 50%, or, you know, what's the usual path to share gains after you upgrade to fiber?
Yeah, we're well on our way. The way I answer these kinds of questions, I just point mm-hmm. to Atlantic Canada. We've had fiber in Atlantic Canada generally more or less ubiquitously for quite a long time, because the Bell Alliant started their fiber journey back in 2008 and did a very good job, and you know, they reached 50% plus in a fairly, you know, short period of time, and that's kind of like where we are. So it's doable. It's been done in some of the markets that we've had fiber for a fairly short amount of time. We get to close to 50, and that's quite an accomplishment, because if you think back before the fiber journey really, really started in gaining momentum, telcos with copper were at, you know, 33% market share compared to cable, generally speaking, in any province you looked at. Not good, but it's just a function of the technology. And to go from where we were to talking about 50% share in not a long period of time shows how competitive that product is. And I think what's changed, particularly in, call it, the last 3 years, is there is a general awareness in the consumer base that fiber is better. You know, some consumers can articulate exactly why fiber is better. Others can articulate exactly why technologically it's better, but just know it's better. And it's part of like what their neighbors have, our branding, the way we talk about it. It's just generally known. So it's the winning strategy. And the last thing I'll say on this is there can't be any debate that it's the winning strategy when the DOCSIS providers themselves are building fiber in new areas and new neighborhoods. That's your answer right there.
Maybe switching over to the enterprise side. Yeah. So you know, maybe a year and a half ago we were chatting and you talked about 5G and the opportunities on the enterprise side for 5G. It seems like that's been a little slower to materialize. Maybe you can give us an update on 5G and how you're thinking about 5G and enterprise at this point.
Yeah, so what you have to do is you have to adjust to the circumstances or you think things are going to hit and they don't. And it's not just the Bell thing. I think globally the we're just waiting to see on the enterprise side where 5G, MEC, and private networks, et cetera, are going to go. But I'm actually really pleased with where we're at on the enterprise side in the sense of where we're going to go. There's clarity on the strategy. So, and it's not that complicated. So one is we can going to continue to manage that legacy base of revenue that we have, which is where we come from a position of strength, our connectivity, yeah, and our brand and our distribution relationships, our client relationships. So that's our position of strength. We're going to continue to manage that as we always do. You know, sometimes customers, you know, delay projects, et cetera, but we continue to be the leaders there. At the same time, we realize, you know, we have to get continually be diligent on our cost structure, the entire cost structure across Bell that supports our enterprise customers. So we're good at that. So we're going to continue to be good at that. And the third thing is on the growth areas. What I particularly like about where we're going is the focus now on there are two or three areas where we're going to go seek enterprise growth that is linked to our connectivity strength and where we feel we have a right to play successfully. So security is one, and it's a strong business for us and it is growing. And two, we've started to talk about this. We acquired a Montreal-based company called FXI, which is a professional managed services enterprise that assists large enterprises in their journey to the cloud and in their digital transformation. So it's particular expertise on a couple, of, you know, in a couple of the hyperscaler environments and ServiceNow, and that does link. There is a synergy there between our connectivity business, what they do, and the customers that we have. So that's a focused strategy. Meanwhile, I think on 5G, MEC, and private networks, certainly those are future potential growth areas. We just have to wait for the market to catch up. The networks are there. I would say that probably in the nearer term, private networks have more growth potential than MEC. We all thought globally, you know, industry leaders, that would be the other way around, but it's going to come.
And when you think about that legacy enterprise business, mm-hmm, right now, what are you seeing out of it at the moment, and how do you think about growth in that business? So you're seeing, you know, some of the move to next generation services, or is it maybe a bit of a separate cohort of customers in the legacy group versus your new?
It wouldn't be a separate cohort of customers because we are trying to leverage the same customer base for the kind of the traditional connectivity services, mm-hmm, as we are for the growth areas. But it's steady as she goes. In sense, you know, we're going to be leveraging our fiber footprint to better serve our enterprise customers who need the very best network connectivity, 5G backup, those kinds of things.
Okay. Yeah. I'll open it up to questions out there one more time. All right. Maybe I'll switch over to free cash flow. Mm-hmm. So free cash flow, you guys have a 2 to 10% growth target for the year. First half of the year came in below that. Can you talk a little bit about the puts and takes you're seeing with free cash flow right now and how investors should think about the back half of the year?
Yeah, this is. I won't bury the lead on this one. We're very comfortable with our guidance and how we're tracking to it. So I'll start with that. Look, in the first half of the year, so the puts and takes. First half of the year, we spent aggressively on CapEx, particularly related to our build strategy, and you know the weather and the circumstances were such that we could get a very strong head start on our build targets in the first half of the year, which meant more CapEx. So that's kind of right on plan, and we hit cruising altitude on the build very, very quickly. Another impact was working capital in the first in the early part of the year, and particularly as it relates to supplier payments, and that. It's going to reverse itself out in the back half of the year. And another one is cash taxes. So all those things had an impact on the first half of the year. Mm. And that said, I'll end with where I started. We know what our guidance is and we're comfortable with it.
Okay. Another question that I've been getting a bit, and I'm sure you have as well, has been on dividend growth.
Yeah.
And how you think about that 5% dividend growth target that you've had for quite a while, just in the midst of the current competitive environment and the fiber rollout that you're doing?
Yeah, look, we nothing changes in terms of how we express what we're trying to do, right? In 2021, what we said is we were going to go on an accelerated footprint build because it's the right thing to do strategically. We're proving out that it's the right thing to do strategically. It goes back to many of the answers I've given you in our chat here, which is quarter after quarter, we're doing exactly what we said we were going to do as a result of that strategy. So that remains the number one capital priority, which is continue with the multi-year journey we set out in 2021, and we've said the CapEx was going to peak and it was going to start coming down, and that's exactly what's happening, and we're showing the results. We know what our investor base seeks from us. First, it's the stability of the dividend, and two, it's the growth of the dividend, and that doesn't change. So, it's a consistent answer that I've given pretty much since I've been CEO, and that's the path we're on.
Okay. And when you think about the target for the dividend payout ratio, how do you think about the pathway to get to a dividend payout in kind of that range?
Yeah, it's much the same answer.
Okay.
As part of this journey that we articulated, which was multi-year, we said we were going to operate outside of the payout ratio, mm-hmm. but that's a function of a deliberate strategy for the long term, right? Because what we're building here on a more aggressive basis than we had before is a company that's going to be a long life infrastructure company, because the physical infrastructure associated with wireless is there. It's not that you can upgrade from 4G to 5G to 6G to whatever G on a fairly low capital intensity basis. And then on the wireline side, it is difficult to build fiber at the pace we're building it, and across this geography. It's difficult. It takes many, many years and a lot of capital. We're on the tail end of that. So, when we reach kind of the end, it never ends because Canada's growing, but you know what I mean, when we reach the tail end of that, that fiber's there for decades. And this is going to be a long life fiber infrastructure company.
Okay. Maybe switching over to media. You've been right-sizing that media group amid the slower ad market. Can you talk a little bit about your asset evolution over time? How important is media and sports, and how do you kind of see the business evolving over the longer term?
Yeah, so over the longer term, we're right in the midst of the media transformation that we set out to do a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. which is a pretty aggressive pivot towards digital.
Yeah.
So We are no longer a traditional media company. We're actually a digital content and and technology company on that side. It's premium content, so that's sports and premium entertainment and news, available on any device through any network technology, so digital platforms. And so that's why you see all the emphasis we place on Crave. That's why we have, Crave now has ads. That's the hard pivot towards making sure all our content is available on the CTV app here in this market on the Nouveau app, which is our French language conventional TV network, and TSN and RDS Direct. So those platforms are the future of Bell Media. And then, so that's, that addresses the future of subscriptions, while we obviously continue to have a significant base of viewers who view our content through distributors. Of course, they're an important partner. And then there's a digital advertising technology, so that we've built our own DSP, so demand side platform for an ad tech and data insights and attribution for our advertisers. What I mean by attribution is, better measurement of viewers have seen the ads, and that's prompted that viewer to make a purchase. So all that is an aggressive digital and technology pivot, and that's where the business is going in the medium term, and I'm really happy with our progress on it. And as far as where it fits in, we are a very good owner of this asset, and it's worked well for us over the years strategically. I mean, content does pull in TV distribution. TV distribution does pull through internet. Internet does pull through TV. And so it works all the way through in this direction and that direction, and I'm quite happy. We have executed on vertical integration between content and communications, I would say, better than anyone anywhere.
So it sounds like you're comfortable with your asset mix here.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. All right. Is there any last questions from the audience? All right. Well, thank you very much, Mirko.
Well, thanks, Stephanie.